Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
It's the Pat Kenny Show with Anton in for Pat. And it's time for the Friday Forum. And our guest this Friday, Breed Smith, People Before Profit TD, and of course running in the Dublin South Central constituency for, or running in the Dublin constituency for the European election, NASA Hurricane Green Party TD for Dublin Central, and Louise O'Reilly Sinn Féin TD for Dublin Fingal. And I think where we should start is with the news overnight that for the first time in history, an American president has been convicted of a crime. 34 charges specifically. Were you surprised that he was found guilty, Breed?
Well, not really. I'm delighted. I mean, he's a sexist pig, to say the least. He talks about grab women by the pussy and the whole scandal of hush money and all the rest of it. It really is so off-putting. But the problem, of course, in American politics is you may have a first time ever that a president is guilty of a crime. He may go to jail, he may not. But the problem is, what's the alternative? And Biden is just no alternative that would excite anybody. I mean, the man made a statement there the other day when they incinerated, when the Israelis incinerated children in their tents, that was not a red line for him in terms of exporting arms to Israel. I mean, hello, what sort of a human being could say that? And also, Biden is now threatening to bomb Russia with nuclear bombs, no less. Now, this is the last thing we need on the planet, so...
Well, let's keep with Trump, because that's the latest news, is the
sure,
criminal
but
trial.
I'm just
What's
saying,
your expectation of the political impact of that? Do you think it'll make a difference? Because nothing so far has.
I think it might make a slight difference, but for some people it'll make a difference. I couldn't vote for him now, but for others they'll double down on it. So I think it's great that he's convicted. I have absolutely no sympathy for him. I don't think anybody in this room has. But I'm making that point that the alternative is
Indeed.
Not very exciting.
You did that split of the voters, that some of them will say they'll double down and some of them will be put off by it. When you suggested that some would be put off, Nessa was shaking her head. You don't think this is going to have an impact on anybody?
I don't think they will, unfortunately. You can see very quickly he came out and said this is rigged. This is a breach of my human rights. And also he said something that really jumped out at me, which is the real verdict will be in November, as in... The judiciary doesn't matter, the legal system doesn't matter, law doesn't matter, how people will vote and whether they'll vote for me is what matters. And that is fundamentally a question around, does the USA now have a functioning democracy? Because if you have politicians, you know, we talk in this country all the time about the independence of the judiciary and the idea of law and order, and you now have somebody who's trying to be the first citizen of a country saying law and order doesn't apply to me. It doesn't even count. In fact, it's not even relevant. It's not even valid. And I think that is a very scary, strange place for the US to be. I think it's fundamentally a kind of a question around their democracy. We won't see the sentencing, I think, until the 11th of July. So in between now and then, we're going to have this weird thing of a debate, which even in itself, that debate is questionable. Biden and Trump have both gone outside the standard norm of the debate process and gone to a private company and said, we're going to have a debate between the two of us. And he is going to be a convicted felon awaiting sentencing, having a presidential debate. Now, that is shocking. And it's even more shocking that I'm going to sit here as a politician and say, I am not convinced that will change anybody's vote. I think we've seen him breach moral and basic societal standards multiple times and people still vote for him.
How do you fix that bit, Louise? Because regardless of the individual in question, It goes to the taste, choice, ethics, morality, ideology of a large chunk of the American electorate who see no problem with it.
Oh, but look at the choice they've been left with. Just, it is utterly depressing to see the state of American politics really at the moment. The choice between Biden and Trump is what they're going is what people are going to have to face, I think.
But one is a man who has been found by a civil jury to have committed sexual assault and to have committed felony crimes. Surely that is a magnitude different to I don't like his policies.
Well, I mean, there's not a lot that you could say in favour of Biden in relation to Israel and Palestine. And I think he's behaved, you know, really appallingly. I think in terms of Trump, I would tend to agree. I don't think that the fact that he is now a convicted, do you say convicted felon?
When he's a convicted felonies? Felon, yeah.
So he's now a convicted felon, which is a hell of a thing to say about the person who is effectively the front runner in the presidential campaign. The notion that in between the guilty verdict and the sentencing, they're going to be rambling into a television studio to have a debate. I just find that wild. I really do. It's shocking. And I think, you know, if that is driving support and the fact that he is now, that Trump is now a convicted felon, will not interfere with his support. And I'd agree, I don't think it will. It might actually drive support towards him. I think that says a lot about where American politics are. And I think the only way to counter that is education. I think the only way to do that is to bring people back to democracy, because when you walk out of a courtroom and you are a former president and want to be the next president and you utterly undermine the judiciary in the way that was done, I mean, that to me is just a fairly frightening indictment of where American politics is right now.
I'll come to you in one second, Nessa Bridge. Do you want to come in on that?
Just to say, Nessa and I were talking about outside that what America needs is a reform of the electoral system. You've got this two-party system where only millionaires can afford to run, and odds are stacked against ordinary, decent people having a voice. We've a really good system here when you look at it. You know, the PR system is very fair, but it also means that all sorts of people can enter the fray. A bit problematic sometimes, but at the same time, you know, fair is fair. You get to do your work, make your pitch,
and it has that moderating influence by virtue of transfers. You don't, being binary isn't incentivized the way it is. Yeah,
exactly.
US.
But in the US, the question of having a third force that'll run in the elections, like what was his name that almost made it there? God, his name is
Ralph Nader, JFK, or Robert Kennedy Jr.
No, that almost made it in the last election. The socialist guy.
Oh, Bernie Sanders.
Yeah. To make a space for somebody like that is nearly impossible, you know.
Particularly when they split the vote on the side that they might be in support of. Nessa, you wanted to come in?
Yeah, well, I agree, by the way, with that a two-party system breeds polarisation. You push people to the margins of the spectrum, and you can see it both in the UK and the USA that it's been hugely, actually kind of traumatic, I think, for everybody to be watching it. I can't imagine what it's like to live in those countries. But I think there is an interesting thing here is that we have seen, both in our own country and abroad, that, you know, it's not without precedent that somebody who has tussled or maybe been convicted of crimes has then sought representation. Often, though, the difference is that it's in pursuit of their activism. So they might have a history of some kind of activism that has then resulted in some kind of conviction. What's interesting here is Trump tried to paint this as an entirely personal issue, as a kind of a family matter. And then when his staff came into the trial, they were very quick to say, actually, this was not really, he wasn't a concern for him around family issues and maybe the betrayal of his wife, for example. But this was around his standing as a presidential candidate.
We have an interesting capacity to return candidates to the Dáil who have terrorism convictions and who have major corruption findings against them.
Well, I was going to say to you, the way we deal with his tribunals of inquiry that cost millions, make barristers very rich. There's a part of West Cork that's known as Tribunal Mile because lots of lawyers made loads of money on tribunals that were to deal with things that, if you're in America, you'd be before the courts. And our politicians that have been subjected to these tribunals should have been before the courts. But
well,
we slither away from it.
There is precedent there. I think the interesting thing that you're here is, though, is the US is very, they're very penalising of people who are convicted felons and are in prison or outside of prison and convicted felons. It might be that Trump actually can't vote for himself, because he's a Florida resident, as I understand it. And if you are a convicted felon in Florida, you can't vote.
But all of that,
if the margins are that small, we have really.
But all of that actually just underlines what a really terrible place American politics is in. I mean, the notion that we're actually having a discussion about, you know, oh, well, in this state now, he won't be able to vote for himself because he's a convicted felon. And is the person who, I mean, I think we're all agreed is most likely to be the next president. And the idea that this is driving support for him is evidence, if it is needed, of a system that is just broken.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again. Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Let's move to issues closer to home. We were speaking to the Minister for Justice, Helen McEntee, earlier on in the programme about the issue of people seeking international protection, and she was saying that the aim is that the processing time would be brought back to 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, depending on the category into which they fall. But it is going to be at least next year before that happens. In the meantime, it looks like we're going to continue with this revolving cycle of here's a tent, try to find somewhere to use it, then we'll take it off you.
Yeah, and I mean, that is, I suppose, a very visible manifestation of the government's failure to plan. The fact that the tents keep appearing, and you know, we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that like these are housing people, human beings who are effectively being abandoned. I just cannot imagine in this city is my home, I know it well and I speak the language, I cannot imagine what it would be like to be in a strange place where you maybe don't speak the language and to be handed a tent and told go and find yourself somewhere to put it. I think it is a very visible manifestation of a failing government policy and of the government's complete, total and utter failure to plan.
Well, there was an interesting thing in what Helen McEntee said this morning, Breed, in that she effectively said that the government isn't funding NGOs to hand out tents, and if they discover that that is what is being done with the funding, there will be questions to ask. Whereas that's exactly what's now happening, was my understanding.
That is the most right-wing thing I ever heard anyone in that government say, that they won't fund the NGOs because they're trying to help desperate people. I mean, what sort of a country are they trying to bring us into? I know they're blue shirts, but by God, that's blue shirts and deep blue. And it's disgraceful, and we should kick back against that. Of course, the doll is closed now for 10 days or so, but we need to raise this very seriously. I mean, it is awful that they hand them a tent, let them sleep there for a week or so, and then shovel them all up. I was in Mount Street the first morning that the tents were moved, and it's very intimidating, very frightening. It's hurtful. You feel like, you know, these people are being treated like bits of dirt or rats or something. And they're, as Louise said, they're human beings. And a lot of them are increasingly coming from Palestine, from Somalia, from absolute places of absolute terror and war. And they make a very dangerous journey and to get to a place where they're looking.
The government argument would be, well, it's a stopgap measure. When we get people arrive in, we do our best to provide them with what's available, which may be just a tent for a week, 2 weeks, and then we get them whatever accommodation.
Well,
I don't think
they're doing their best with what's available. This city is full of empty buildings, full of empty property belonging to HSE, belonging to the state, belonging to semi-state companies and private office blocks. It's full of them. I was in a refugee camp in Athens that was built inside an old airport terminal, and it showed that empty buildings are big empty buildings that have access to toilets and showers are ideal places. You can put individual tents inside them and let people live. And the other point is that, you know, she's talking about now processing them 2 to 3 months. Well, we need to know, is that just about more staff, or are you overlooking certain aspects of their application? That's an important thing to find out. And I would argue, while they're being processed, let them work. Let them make a contribution to society. They're all young men with a pair of hands, strong young men, let them work, let them pay taxes, make a contribution, and after the processing, see what happens.
Nessa, what if that suggestion about the thing of empty buildings, because that comes in by text every time you discuss mm-hmm. this, and if you look at the Baggett, at the Grand Canal encampment as a case in point, they're what, 500 yards from the old Baggot Street Hospital, which mm-hmm. is an empty, I think a HSE building, but it is definitely a large empty building right mm-hmm. beside.
It's owned by the HSE.
It is HSE. Mm-hmm. Is something like that not a solution?
Well, as far as I know, the department consistently reviews what buildings are available. I think that there's an important point in what Breed said, which is that in the last few years, in the scramble post-pandemic, with the kind of influx of people seeking international protection, we have seen a kind of a replay of what we had in emergency homeless accommodation, which I have to say I'm really critical of, which is the privatisation of those services. And what we're seeing now in the last few months is a move away from that. So, you know, the department and the state really trying to invest in state-owned and state-run sites. And I think that's actually really, really important. So I would agree that there are empty buildings. I would agree. And we all know that, you know, there are problems even within that, because we are seeing issues around, let's say, arson. We are seeing some elements in society mobilise to block the usage of buildings. But I do think we need to be clear on a focus of state-owned and state-provided services, because we really have created a rod for our own back and a very poor system in homelessness services, which is around private provision. And it's really incredibly important that we move as quickly as possible away from that in the provision of international protection, because, you know, in 2020, we were talking about the Catherine Day report and how to move away from direct provision. But we were also talking about numbers of like 4,000 people. And at best, what we're looking at in the next few years is 15,000 per year. And that is a completely different undertaking. And so I think it's really important that we hold on to that idea of state provision, not private buildings.
The final topic that I want to discuss is one that was brought up earlier on, but let's focus on it specifically. That being what the situation in Israel. This is the week that we saw the state recognition of Palestine. Did it make a blind bit of difference to anything, Louise?
Well, I actually spoke about this in the Dáil, and I spoke about how while it was symbolic, it was still important. And I used the words of Charlotte Phillips, the captain of the Palestinian women's team, who spoke just after the Bowes game in Daly Mount. And she said, you know, they tried to erase us, but us being here is proof of our existence, and us recognising and the Dáil recognising the state of Palestine, which, you know, should have been done 10 years ago when Sinn Féin first brought the motion, wasn't done. And, you know, like, I think that's that, I regret that time that was lost. It is symbolic, but what happens next is what's important. So we have seen that there are no consequences for the Israeli genocide, and there have to be consequences. And I think, you know, while the symbolism of Tuesday, I wouldn't downplay the importance of it, you know, for campaigners, for activists, for people in Palestine. Actually, the actions that immediately follow it will let us know whether or not it was merely a gesture on behalf of the government, or whether or not they are serious.
In terms of the timing, Breed Smith, I was talking to Alan Shatter on my programme on the weekend, and he said that this will be seen as a vote of support for terrorism, and that this has already been welcomed by Hamas.
Well, I think Alan Shatter has a very one-sided view of what goes on inside the Zionist state, the apartheid state of Israel, and he's always at pains to defend it and to accuse probably all three of us here in this room of being anti-Semite, because we are sympathetic to the Palestinian cause. We're out marching with the IPSC and supporting the students when they occupy, and calling for sanctions. I mean, what was said there is absolutely right. There has to be consequences, there has to be sanctions, and there's all sorts of ways of putting sanctions, and Ireland could play a lead. But the problem is the double standards are incredible. Sanctions, yes, on Russia for the invasion of Ukraine. Fly the Russian flag the Ukrainian flag for the last 2 years, and more sanctions on Putin, but nothing on Netanyahu. The double standards are shocking. And, you know, we now find out today that even though we've been arguing all week to defend our neutrality, not to give up the triple lock, Micheál Martin has actually written to NATO and said, we want to be involved with you in combative operations and in security operations. along with three other countries. He has this knack now of working with other countries and making it look like, here I am, very genuine. What he's doing is ditching our neutrality and not giving us the referendum.
That and I think that's a massive mistake that that this government are making. And it's not, this is not Micheál Martin on a solo run. This is the government. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a huge mistake. They are underestimating the feeling that we have, that Irish people have, for our neutrality. It is absolutely huge. And it is something that comes up on the doors.
It
and
does,
people
yeah.
are not
yeah.
happy that the government, and I know Micheál Martin might be the leading figure in it, but it will be the government that do it, and they
well,
are not happy.
Well, he is
with
the
this.
Leading figure on it, but he also has no mandate for it. It's in the programme for government that we would respect the Triple R.
So what is Eamon Ryan going to do about it, NASA? That's the big question. Because it's yeah. in his manifesto, and it's been trumpeted by the Green Party. We want to maintain a neutrality. And you're sitting in a government and
well,
saying
I'm not
nothing about
in the
it.
Government. I'm outside.
Your party
So your party is
your
in government,
party is in
I suppose.
Government. And you're still in that party. Like, it's shameful that the Green Party are actually allowing this to happen.
It is absolutely
shameful. That is where we will have to leave it. Breed Smith, TD for People Before Profit and candidate for the Euros in Dublin. Nessa Harrigan, Green Party, TD for Dublin Central. And Louise O'Reilly, Sinn Féin, TD for Dublin Fingal. A reminder, if there is anything that you missed on the programme, you can listen back on the News Talk app powered by GoLed. Just search for the...
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.